Consider them to be the best of devotees. Purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, although Yavan indicates that Lord Krishna cannot be limited by time or space, he becomes limited by the love of his pure devotees. For example, Lord Krishna never stepped one foot out of Vrindavan because of the intense love of its inhabitants for him. In this way, the Lord comes under the control of the devotee's love. The word Ya indicates that Krishna is the absolute truth who appears as the son of Vasudeva or Shamasundara. Yadrisha indicates that the Lord is Atmarama or completely self-satisfied and also Aptikama or one who automatically fulfills all his desires. Still being affected by the love of his devotees, the Lord sometimes appears to be Anatmarama, or dependent on the love of his devotees, and anaptakarma, unable to achieve his desire without the cooperation of his devotees. Actually, the Supreme Lord Krishna is always independent, but he reciprocates the intense love of his devotees, and thus appears to be dependent upon them. Just as he apparently becomes dependent on Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda during his childhood pastimes in Vrindavan. The word agyatva, inexperienced or lacking knowledge, indicates that sometimes a devotee may not have a proper philosophical understanding of the personality of Godhead, or due to love may temporarily forget the Lord's position. In the Bhagavad Gita 11.41, Arjuna says, Sakhe matva prasadam yad uktam, He Krishna, He Yadava, He Sakheti, agyanata mahimanam, Tave dum, Nayam paramdat, pramadat pranayena vapi. I have in the past addressed you as O Krishna, O Yadava, O my friend, without knowing your glories. Please forgive whatever I may have done in madness or in love. Arjuna's word, agyanata mahimana, have the same meaning as Krishna's words, agyatva mam, in this verse of the Bhagavatam. Both indicate incomplete understanding of Krishna's glories. In the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna says, Pranayena, his forgetfulness of Krishna's supreme position was caused by his love for him. In this verse, Krishna excuses such lapses on the part of his devotees with the words Agyatvaman, which indicate that even though a devotee may not fully appreciate his exalted position, Krishna accepts their loving service. Thus, this verse clearly reveals the supreme position of bhakti. Lord Krishna also states in Bhagavad Gita 11:54, Bhaktya tvananyaya shakha aham evam vido ajuna gyatum dristum cha tatvena pravishtum cha parantapa. My dear Arjuna, only by undivided devotional service can I be understood as I am standing before you, and thus be seen directly. Only in this way can you enter into the mysteries of my understanding. Although one may develop innumerable saintly qualities, without love of Krishna, one will not achieve complete success. One must understand the personality of Godhead as he is and love him. Even if one is not capable of analytically understanding the position of God, if one simply loves Krishna, then one is certainly perfect. Many of the residents of Vrindavan have no idea that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, nor did they know that Krishna's potencies are incarnations. They simply love Krishna with their hearts and souls, and therefore they are considered the most perfect. Om Agyanati Miranda Shyaganam Janasha Lakya Chakshurum Hutam Nena Tasmai Shri Guru Vrindavan Namo Om Vishnu Varaya Krishna Vrstaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devam Gauravani Pacharini Nevisesha Shri Guru Vashachata Shatarine Shri Krishna Jaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasudhi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram That's a beautiful purport. So it's all about loving Krishna. How do we love Krishna? This is the essence of a devotee's life. How can we love Krishna more and more and more? We want to love Krishna. One must understand Krishna as he is and love him. Yeah, for me. And we have to love him with all intensity, that beautiful little boy, that beautiful little cowherd boy. It's interesting because I just recently heard from a friend of mine who was a practitioner of a meditation process that I was involved in many years ago, that even the Mayavadis are attracted to Krishna. Even the Mayavad teachers, all the great yogis that have been coming to the West for so long, I heard that my previous Mayavadi guru was also actually a secret lover of Krishna. Although he never espoused it, it was actually found out that anywhere that he travelled, he had to have this particular picture of Krishna in his bedroom. For real, I can't handle it. I can't concentrate, if you don't mind. It was everywhere he went, he had this particular picture of Krishna. You know the one of Krishna with the deer on his lap? That one? It's a really old picture of Krishna with the deer on his lap. And he would insist that his disciples had this in every bedroom that he stayed in. So he also insisted, he recently passed away, Maharishi. He recently passed away and he insisted that at his funeral when he was being cremated, he had to have the Maha Mantra being chanted, only the Maha Mantra. So there's this DVD of his funeral procession, and all you see is all of his disciples chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. That's how he left the material world. So it's quite interesting. Recently we had an interfaith conference in Dandenong where all the different religious groups came together. And it was quite interesting because it's all centred about love of God, basically, and how people in different traditions love God. And we had one, after all the talks and everything, we had little workshops where we'd get together and have little workshops discussing different things. And the workshop that I was involved with was the diversities of different religious understandings of God. And the lady that was chairing the meeting was from the... where is she from? The Baha'i Faith. The Baha'i Faith. Very nice lady. But she was saying, as a matter of fact, actually, we all know that we can't approach God. You know that God is absolutely unapproachable. We can't know him we can't really approach him. We all know that. You know, like she was sort of directing to all the people that were there, all the different religious groups, thinking, you all understand that. We all have that same understanding that we can't approach God. And I said, excuse me, I'm sorry, but in our tradition, in the Vedic tradition, actually there is a possibility for us to know God and to actually interchange and have loving reciprocation with God. And I think you have to be mindful of other people's positions before you carte blanche say that we can't understand God. Oh, I'm very sorry, I'm very sorry. Because at these interfaith sort of meetings, they're all very much not wanting to upset the apple cart of other people's religion. So, but I had to make that quite clear, that actually can know God. We can know God, we can love God. As we progress in our devotional service, we know more and more about God. Even if we can't analytically completely understand God, we can still love him. We can still love him. We can still fall in love with this little blue cowbird boy. Even in our earliest Krishna conscious years, you know, when we first saw a picture of Krishna, we fell in love with that beautiful little boy. So captivating. There's that example that you give, if say for example of the child of a national leader, he has no idea, he or she has no idea the potency of that leader, you know, like the Prime Minister of Australia or the President of the United States or the President of Russia. They have no idea how powerful their daddy is. They just love their daddy. They have no idea that he can rule over so many people and so on and so forth. They just love their daddy. So similarly, we sometimes forget how powerful Krishna is, how wonderful he is, how great he is. But that doesn't stop us from simply loving Krishna. And to love Krishna is perfect. We have to love him and become perfect. So in Bhagavad Gita, it says in 9:14, Satatam ketyanta mam yantas chatra tvrata namascha chamam bhakjam nitya yukto pashate. Always chant my glories, endeavouring with great determination, bowing down before me, these great souls perpetually worship me with devotion. Love. They constantly develop their love. We have to develop our love for Krishna. Now we engage in different activities of devotional service to develop that love for Krishna, directed by the spiritual master, because the spiritual master is our example. The spiritual master is an amazing personality because he actually feels that love for God. And we pick up on how, we don't blindly accept a spiritual master just because he looks good, or she looks good, or he talks really well. What actually happens is we see how the spiritual master loves Krishna, and it's how the spiritual master loves Krishna that enthuses us to love him or her. So we feel that not on an intellectual level, not on an emotional level, but from heart to heart. And the spiritual master, and we have faith of the love of the spiritual master has for Krishna. And so that faith encourages us, because we see the unalloyed devotion that the spiritual master has, constantly preaching, constantly doing worship, constantly serving his spiritual master and Krishna. That enthuses us. Wow, he has got something special in his life. Let me follow him or her like that. So the spiritual master tells us to be faithful to Krishna and serve by offering these different activities, devotional activities, following the four regulative principles, doing service for the Lord. And under the guidance of the spiritual master, we can do that. Just like in the Catholic tradition, and we have to become very chaste. In the Christian tradition, Catholic in particular, the nuns that become full-time monastic personalities, they actually even have like a marriage ceremony where they marry themselves to Jesus. It's called the Brides of Christ. They actually have a service where they are marrying Jesus, that they remain chaste for Jesus. They'll do everything for Jesus. In the same way, when we take initiation from our spiritual master, we become a bride or a partner, a loving partner to Krishna. And that means, like, even in any marriage situation, we remain faithful. We remain devoted. We develop our love for our partner, for those that are married. We understand that. And we don't go running off with somebody else because we love our partner and we have faith and we are chaste. We don't go anywhere else. So similarly, when we take initiation, we become the transcendental partner of Krishna. And thereby, we are able to follow the regulative principles because we love Krishna. It's not that somebody is standing with a big stick saying, you know, no, you can't steal, or you can't have a dissertation, or you can't eat meat, and it's hit like that. No, we don't do it for that. And it wouldn't work. It doesn't work. Any of you that went through the primary school or tertiary education with in a different religious tradition, and people used to smack you on the hand if you did something wrong, that's not the way you follow principles. You actually follow principles by love. So we follow these principles. We don't eat meat because Krishna, our lover, doesn't like to see the suffering of the living entities and other living entities just for gratification of the tongue. Krishna doesn't want to see us gamble with our lives because we understand that Krishna resides within our body and within the bodies of other living entities, and we don't want to harm that situation. So in all these different ways, Krishna is the source of us maintaining our principles. So engage in all these rasas because we want the ultimate goal in life. You know, there's so much talk today about achieving our goal in life. What is our goal in life? The devotee's goal in life is simply to be with Krishna. Always. Just to associate with Krishna. One of the five rasas in Goloka Vrindavan. We just want to be with Krishna. There's nothing else. We're wild about Harry. Hari. So, we have to follow the rules and regulations of the great acharyas. They lay it out before us. If you want to love Krishna, this is what you have to do. You want to achieve this goal. We want to find out what makes our lover happy. Krishna is our lover. Krishna is our life. Even in a mundane sense, when we have boyfriend, girlfriend, you know, when you first find that dream partner, you're at a dance and you met this wonderful personality, and you know, later on you find out, like we used to do at the socials. You know how we used to have socials? You ever have socials? Where two schools, boys' school, girls' school, come together and they have a social, a dance. It's called a social. And then this girl from, you know, like we'd eventually muster up the courage to go and ask a girl to dance, and then you would dance with her, and then you'd go back to your friends and say, oh, wow, she was really nice, you know. And then you would want to find out more about this girlfriend that you just danced with. So in the same way, we want to find out what our lover, Krishna, likes. What does he want of us? What will make him happy? So, Krishna, and Prabhupada says that this love of God is for everyone. It's not just for a sannyasi or for a vanaprastha. It's for everyone. It's for grihasthas, it's for boys, it's for girls, it's for everyone. Everyone can love Krishna. Everyone that's part of this world can love Krishna. Bhanu Swami was saying yesterday that devotion is more important than developing good qualities. So this bhakti is more important than developing good qualities. There are many, many self-development programs which teach us how to be better people, how to be more tolerant, how to be more forgiving, how to be more enthusiastic, all these qualities. And as Bhanuswami was pointing out, they're actually secondary things. The most important thing is to be a fully fledged, fully engaged bhakti yogi. Just become a lover of God. Then what happens is, as he was pointing out, these qualities automatically develop. All these qualities develop automatically. And one of the most important qualities that develop is compassion, karuna. Because Krishna is all compassionate. He is so compassionate he travels with each and every one of us within our hearts. He is so compassionate that all he wants is for us to come back to him. And so naturally it's also a quality of the devotee that they start developing this compassion. When they start feeling a little bit of this love for Krishna, They have nothing better to do than to pass it on to somebody else because of compassion. They see people struggling. They see people suffering in the real world. They want to ease that. And so they want to also give this goal to other people, that the goal of life is actually not pursuing a big house or not pursuing great wealth, not pursuing the most fantastic partner. The goal of life is to simply love God. And when we love God, we'll get so much back in returns. So the question remains, how can we love Krishna more? You know, when you ask someone, when you're preaching and you're talking to people, people say, yes, but how can I love Krishna? How do I feel this love for Krishna? So this love for Krishna is, another way, is that we see Krishna everywhere. We see his creation. We see Krishna in everyone. We see Krishna in everyone. You know, that Krishna resides within the heart of every living entity. And the more and more we engage in this analytical understanding of Krishna, the more we engage in devotion, the more and more good qualities come. So again, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, and he stresses this twice in Bhagavad Gita, it's just a little bit different. Mamanam Bhagavad Bhakto, Majaji Mam Namaskuru, Mame Vaishyasha Yukvaivam, Atmanam Parajana. Engage your mind always in thinking of me. Thinking of me. We actually have to think of Krishna. We are thinking living entities. What makes us different from animals is that we can think. We can reason things through. Being completely absorbed in me. We have to be completely absorbed in Krishna. We have to be Krishna fanatics. Completely absorbed with Krishna. Surely you will come to me. The goal is achieved. Krishna is saying, surely you will come to me. He guarantees it, as he did in the other section. Krishna guarantees this. How do we come to Krishna? We have to learn how to sacrifice for Krishna. We have to sacrifice things. A mother sacrifices for the love of her children. A father sacrifices for the love of her children. A lover sacrifices for their lover. They'll do anything for their lover. In history, we see so many different accounts of a man or a woman who is totally infatuated with so-called material love for their partner, that they will do anything. They will start world wars just to for their lover. It's a fact. They'll do anything. They'll kill. They'll do anything. So we have to sacrifice for Krishna. And we do that willingly. A mother, those of us that are parents, willingly surrender and sacrifice things for our children. You know, we'll do anything. You know, what does my child need? Oh, well, I need some new shoes, but my kid needs new shoes. They're first. I'll sacrifice that. I'll work hard, I'll work overtime so my kid can have a good education. Sacrifice. So the devotee has to sacrifice for Krishna. We sacrifice things. And we offer obeisances. Krishna says there to offer obeisances. We offer obeisance by Namaha. Om Keshavaya Namaha. When we put our tilak on. Trivikmaya Namaha. Om Govindaya Namaha. Namaha means not me. Not me, Lord, you. Everything is for Krishna. Nothing is for me. The essence of the Bhagavad Gita is that an offering is nothing less than one's entire self. A devotee offers nothing less than one's entire self, mind, body and speech. Everything we give to Krishna. That's perfection, and that's the essence of the Gita, and that's the conclusion of the Gita. Give everything over to Krishna. So devotion, love, the heart's domain, rules over all. It is the path, the ocean, in which all the rivers flow. So, for want of a better understanding, this was a really nice quote that I heard. Devotion, love, the heart's domain, rules over all. It is the path, the ocean, into which rivers must flow. All rivers must flow. So all, everything eventually comes into this path of love. Now, in India, the bhakti yogi has been considered for so long as being a sentimentalist. Oh, this is sentimental. But there's nothing sentimental about it. It is just from the heart. Again, how do we love Krishna more? Always thinking of him, completely absorbed. Our Krishna consciousness, as devotees, we have to remain conscious. We have to constantly think. Krishna consciousness cannot be a routine work, which sometimes we see happen. Krishna consciousness becomes just a routine. We have to keep thinking, what am I doing this service for? Why am I doing this service? You know? So often we go in the material world where we go to our jobs and we're like, oh God, it's Monday morning. Yeah, okay, we'll do our typing, or we do our reception work, or we do our accounting, or we do our IT work. And it becomes mundane. It becomes a routine. Practically, you're in the Bahamas or in Hayman Island or the Gold Coast, and you're still doing isn't it? That can't happen in devotional service. That can't happen in devotional service. We have to constantly think, why am I doing this service? I'm doing this service because I love Krishna. I want to do this because I love Krishna. And as it's pointed out here, even we don't know everything about Krishna, we haven't analytically understood Krishna, all we know is we want to love him. Prabhupada actually said sometimes, when he saw this activity going on for the devotees and their non-thinking sort of attitude in doing their devotional service, he said, the chanting starts and the thinking stops. We can't let the thinking stop. We have to be constantly determined to do what Krishna likes, and we have to constantly remember that every little thing that we do is in service to Krishna. So if we have an opportunity to do an offering, It's offering to Krishna. You're cooking for God. Like recently, my service has changed a little bit. And sometimes my brothers and sisters ask, well, what are you doing now? You know, you're not managing the restaurant anymore. What are you doing now? One day I really let him have it. I said, well, actually, I get an opportunity to... the first thing in the morning that I do is I help God dress. And I just went, wow. Yeah, I actually get an opportunity to dress God. I couldn't understand. It was a stir. But, you know, the point of it is then I explain the whole process of deity worship. But that's what we get. We have to constantly think. So if we're doing an offering, a fruit offering, just put that little bit of extra bhakti into it. If we're cleaning the courtyard, just put that little bit of extra bhakti into it. Thinking, remembering, Krishna. Krishna is my lover. Krishna is my life. Let me do this for him. Like that. Like recently I noticed when I do the Gundicha, those people that do the Rajbhogan Gundicha, they know that, you know, the cups have to go back into the altar. You know, somebody has the pre-wet side and the wet side and whatever. But at one stage the cups have to come back into the altar. Now somebody, some devotee, maybe because there were the extra flowers or whatever, but consciously thought, I'm putting a little sprig of flowers on each little cup just for Krishna. It was those little things that it's great for Krishna, it's an offering to Krishna, but it's great for the devotee that did it because that's an extra little love. Hey Krishna, I love you. Put that little bit of flower there. It's necessary. It's very much needed. So our actions are for his pleasure, not for our pleasure. We often say, just engage in devotional service. Just do your service, Prabhu. But we have to know why are we doing this service? What will please our Guru and Krishna? We have to use our thinking ability. This is a very, very important thing. We have to use our thinking ability. In the Bible, in Proverbs, it says, as a person thinketh, so he is. In Proverbs, in the Bible, it says, as a person thinketh, so he is. So as we think, our life becomes. If we absorb ourselves in thinking about Krishna, we'll go to Krishna. If we think in a positive way, we get positive results. If we think in a negative way, you have negative results. That's a fact. There's an educator in the United States called Ed McFarlane. And he actually said that 2% of the people actually in the world population, right? 2% of the population actually think. They use the thinking capacity. 3% of the population think they think. 95% of the people in the world would rather die than think. We'd rather die than think. So that 2%, actually, most of that 2% is taken up by the voters, because we actually are thinking, why am I here? In our preaching, when we're out preaching, how often has it been that we meet someone and you say, are you concerned about, you know, where you're going to go, what life is about? Are you concerned about growing old and eventually dying? Oh, no, don't think about that. Oh, no. No, that's come into my thinking. Isn't it? And why don't you think, oh, no, I don't want to think about death. Oh, God, no, I don't want to think about old age and disease. It's going to happen.
Fear.
Fear. Exactly. So, people just want to engage in mental activity. Mental activity is not thinking. Mental activity is not thinking. It doesn't constitute thinking. You know, like, the thinking process is done in our intellect, in our conscious mind. And our conscious mind is linked to the senses. And so the senses of hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, all the different senses make our mind busy. Oh, I need this over there, I need this over there, I need this over there. But thinking is thinking things through. Analysing. Why am I doing this? What's the goal of this? What's the end result? Why? Who? Where? Thinking, philosophically thinking things through. So we have to, and it's by nature that a human being grows. Every one of us grow. And whether it's a positive thing, every one of us ultimately will go back home, back to Godhead. That's the nature of being in this material world. Eventually, we'll understand. It may take many, many lifetimes, but eventually we will go back home, back to Godhead, and achieve the ultimate goal. So we want to associate with Krishna and have him with us, and we have to constantly think of him. And that only happens if we constantly love him. Like, say, for example, again, you've got the mundane loving example, and you have so many songs on the hit parade and so on and so forth that I just can't stop thinking about Johnny, you know. And if you see these young kids, they're constantly, oh, Johnny's on my mind all the time. I just can't get him out of my mind. So in a sense, a devotee has to have this idea too. How can I keep on thinking about Krishna? How can we love Krishna more? We have to constantly see ourselves. How can I love Krishna more? How can I think of him all the time? And the main thing that we have to come to grips with, and the greatest instruction that's given by the spiritual master and by Srila Prabhupada in particular to the West, the main thing is we have to fall in love with the sound vibration of his holy name. We have to fall in love with our chanting. We have to think while we're chanting. We have to meditate while we're chanting on the love that Krishna has for us and the love that we have for Krishna. As recommended by the Acharyas, our japa period is our time that we communicate directly with Krishna. That's our phone call to Krishna. That's our hotline to Krishna. That's our love letter to Krishna. That's our loving song to Krishna. No one is there with you. There's nobody else. Within your heart, it's you and Krishna. And again, I just remember so strongly how Bhakti Churu Maharaj always had that understanding. When he was asked, what do you do when you chant Hare Krishna? And he says, I just think, oh Krishna, I love you. When he said that, again, like the Acharya, you knew that he felt it. Oh Krishna, I love you. That's what we should be focusing on. That's what we should be thinking about when we chant Hare Krishna. Not that it just becomes a routine thing. Oh, I've got to chant more afterwards. Oh, yeah, Hare, Hare, Hare. We had, in the old days, we had some interesting japa people. Somebody sounded like they were chanting underwater. Other people chanted that they were high pitched. There was one that was stick, stick, alarm, alarm, stick, stick, alarm, alarm, stick, stick, alarm, alarm, alarm. There are so many things, but you have to actually think when you're chanting Hare Krishna. You have to think. have to think, am I clearly pronouncing his holy name? Krishna is non-different from his holy name. And when we engage in that chanting correctly, when we engage in that meditation correctly, when we utilize the thinking process correctly, when we're thinking about Krishna's pastimes, when we're thinking about the goal of life that we want to be with Krishna and one of the leelas with Krishna, we make every effort to chant correctly. This wonderful little book by Mahanidhi Swami, Chanting Hare Krishna, The Art of Chanting Hare Krishna, he mentions one thing that's really beneficial. And because we're all fallen conditioned souls, it's sometimes hard to remember Krishna, you know? It's sometimes hard to feel that love for Krishna. It's just, we're so conditioned. One of the things he says is, when it's your time to sing your song of love to God, when it's your time to chant japa, you should say a prayer before you start. And this is what he says. Reciting the following prayer before starting japa will purify the mind, create a feeling of humility, and establish a mood of service, Seva Bhava, in the heart. Meditate deeply on these important prayers and try to memorize them. One can maintain proper mood of humility during japa by remembering the meaning of the prayers while chanting Hare Krishna. So instead of just grab the bead bag and chant some japs now, if you actually stop and just think, what am I about to do? I'm about to sing my song of love to God. I'm about to write my love letter to God. You know how so many times you have people, you know, they write a letter to their loved one. Like during the war, there was letters that were sent to people overseas, to their loved ones overseas. And all they would write is, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you. It's the same with japa. All we're doing is writing to Krishna, saying to Krishna, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you, I want to love you. And just being absorbed. What happens is that there's a reciprocation. It's not a one-way street. It's absolutely not a one-way street. And it's evident by the gurus, by the acharyas. They feel that love for Krishna. And we can see that they feel this love for Krishna. So Krishna reciprocates. He'll actually move into your heart and you'll feel Krishna from within when you actually meditate on the holy name of Krishna like that, in a loving mood, through the heart. You'll actually feel it. So one of the chances, we know that for people that are doing pujari work, naham vipro naripati napivaisho nasudro, naham vanina jagrihapati novanastoyativa. You know that one when we do a little arti? It is, I'm a pure spirit soul. I'm not a brahmana, a kshatriya, a vaishya, or a sudra. Nor am I a brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, or sannyas. I'm nothing more than the servant of the servant of the servant of the lotus feet of Krishna, the maintainer of the gopis. Krishna is an ocean of nectar and the cause of universal transcendental bliss. He always exists in brilliance. I'm by nature the eternal servant of Krishna, but because of my misfortune, I've been inimical towards Krishna from time immemorial. Identifying with my body, I've constantly wandered through the cycle of birth and death. Wandering continuously in the cycle of birth and death, suffering the burning threefold miseries. As a result of some unimaginable good fortune, I've attained the mercy of my spiritual master. And now I know that I'm a Krishna's eternal servant. I'm an infinitesimal spiritual being, completely apart from the gross and subtle body. I've obtained the good fortune of serving the lotus feet of Sri Guru, and under his order I'm able to follow in his footsteps and serve the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sri Sri Radha Balabhadravan. So a little prayer before we start is actually a wonderful thing. And one other point that he was mentioning, which is a really quite an interesting thing, in our japa, we should be crying for Krishna. We should be crying. Not that we all sit around here and bawl, that we have boxes of tissues around the temple and we're all... No. Prabhupada didn't show that sort of emotion. Prabhupada is the crying within the heart. It's the longing to be with Krishna.
Like a baby crying for mother.
Like a baby crying for mother, but not doing both. But yeah, like a baby crying for mother. So you have to have that crying attitude. And can I just finish off by just reading this thing that Bhakti Nidhi, Mahanidhi Swami Prabhu has written here. Crying for Krishna. When the pain of separation for one's beloved intensifies, one may cry out longing for his presence. Tears of separation coat the eye with the required ointment to envision the beloved. In this mood of loving separation from Krishna, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the six Goswamis spent their days and nights crying Radha and Krishna. From the beginning of days of ISKCON, Prabhupada encouraged his disciples to cry out Krishna, to Krishna, pleading, hoping, begging for a chance to serve. Intense hankering for Krishna automatically appears as one advances in devotional service. May the following passages inspire one to cry for Krishna. We are addressing Hare Krishna, O energy of the Lord, please accept me. So this vibration is simply a cry for addressing the Supreme Lord, requesting him, please accept me, please accept me. This chanting is exactly like the genuine cry of a child for its mother's presence. Malahara helps the devotee achieve the Father's grace, and the Lord reveals himself to the devotee who chants this mantra sincerely. This age of Kali is very bad. We have to take shelter of Krishna and always cry as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us. Krishna, 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 hey. One may think that he is a mature person of the world beyond the childish practice of crying. Some people may think, oh, that's a childish thing to do. But the spiritual world by which all hope to attain, which we all hope to attain one day, is simply filled with tears. The Bhagavatam describes how the cows in Vrindavan, what to speak of the people, cry for Krishna. By hearing this, one can appreciate the exalted nature of Krishna's various associates, be they people, cows, birds, grass or tree. One can pray fervently to these residents of the Holy Dham to be merciful and help them melt their stone-like hearts. We all have stone-like hearts. One should wash the altar of devotion with the tears of surrender. How beautiful is that? One should wash the altar of devotion with tears of surrender. Install the form of Krishna there and worship him with garlands of pramananda. Krishna's flute sounds to the cows like the pouring of nectar, and they immediately spread their long ears just to catch a liquid nectar of the flute. As for the calves, they are seen with the nipples of their mothers pressed to their mouths, but they cannot suck the milk. They sort of paused. They remain struck with devotion, and tears glide down their eyes, illustrating vividly how they are embracing Krishna's heart to heart. These phenomena indicate that even cows and calves in Vrindavan knew how to cry for Krishna and embrace him heart to heart. Heart to heart is a heart thing. Actually, Krishna consciousness affection can be culminated in shedding of tears. To sincerely cry for Krishna, one must fully feel helpless, fallen and unfortunate, and call out to Krishna in a mood of complete dependence. Surely touches the Lord's heart. Lord Chaitanya himself and the previous acharyas show the example of regularly weeping for Krishna. One who will cry for Krishna will never come down to the material platform. That crying is not so easy. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to cry, and he also said, I'm crying and it's a nature. So crying automatically comes when we're actually in prema bhakti, but we have to go to the stage gradually, not by imitating. There's another thing. Gaurakishore Das Babaji often fell into a trance, madly calling out the name of Krishna. In that bhava, he locked the door of his bhajan kirti from within, and he stayed there for 13 days, yelling, Ha Krishna Chaitanya! Crying continuously, slapping himself in the chest and tearing his hair out. This is amazing. Separation from Krishna creates two wonderful contradictions. One, when the feeling of separation becomes strong, Krishna manifests himself and embraces the chanter of the holy name. Two, crying for Krishna produces the utmost joy. It is not the result of material grief, Srila Prabhupada describes. The crying is not grief. It is cold tears. It's not hot tears. It's cold tears. Mayavadis say crying is Maya. Crying is great transcendental pleasure. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was simply crying. That is love. But the Mayavadis don't understand how crying can be pleasure. In the next few quotations, Prabhupada explains that one who sheds torrents of tears in love of God has attained success in devotion, perfection in religion, and the summit of Krishna Bhajan. This crying is the last word in the progressive path of devotional service. One who can cry for the Lord in love is certainly successful in the line of devotional service. In conclusion, it is said that we must chant Hare Krishna and sincerely cry for the Lord's mercy. I am a wretched sinner drowning in the ocean of material existence. If Krishna does not cast his glance of compassion upon me, I have no one to turn to. The act of crying, however, should not be done artificially or in imitation, but if one in humility opens his heart and cries for Krishna, surely Krishna will respond with an open heart. When a disciple once said that he did not have the feeling that he could cry for Krishna, even though he tried, Saraswati Thakur replied, "Crying for Krishna is absolutely necessary. If you cannot cry, then at least you should cry that you cannot cry." Siddhanta Saraswati Maharaj said that. So one who weeps when he chants Krishna truly chants Krishna's name. Without Krishna Bhajan, wealth, aristocratic birth are worthless. Hare Krishna, Hare
Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So it's not that we need an outward show of the crying, but in a thinking mood, in a conscious mood, in a determined, strong mood, we develop that crying within the heart. I want you, Krishna, I want to serve. And if we do that in our chanting, in our time of japa, then the rest of the day, what happens? We think of our beloved. We think of Krishna. And any service we do doesn't become a mundane routine. It's actually joyfully performed. And we're happy performing it. This is Krishna consciousness. It is the greatest gift that we could ever have been given. You know, we see the love that's there when it's Krishna's birthday, you know, when the festival days, when Radhastami is coming up. We just have to really support it and think about our service to Krishna, especially in these times. Are there any comments or questions at all, Prabhu?
First of all, we must thank you for such a nice lecture. And real truth about Krishna. Last time we were discussing Bhakti Bhava course, fourth canto. For one saying the same thing in purport, that in happiness or distress, you just chant Krishna.
Yep.
That is the only main thing. So Prabhupada has given such an authentic and appropriate way of getting out of the world, chanting of Hare Krishna.
It's our only solace.
Yeah. And this is a most bona fide movement, ISKCON. Yep. Why? Because Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, at the age of 7 years, he knew Bhagavad Gita completely. All the verses and the completely came. At 7 he could say it. And at the age of 10 years, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was doing the puja of Saligram Sheva. So we have got the best, most authenticated way of reaching to the spiritual world.
Absolutely.
By chanting.
When I do these interfaith programs and you see what other religionists have to offer, it's nice what they're trying to do, but you're just so fortunate. You feel so fortunate in your heart that you've got Krishna, the divine loving personality within your heart. And by the mercy of Guru, you actually have an opportunity to worship God. Because they have some inkling of an idea, but they're so immature in their understanding of Krishna. And you feel so much you want to give them, you know. It's really amazing. We're so fortunate. We've got the greatest treasure. Like Prabhupada said, it's all in the bee bag. It's there. It's the greatest wealth that a devotee can have. Any other comments? Yes, Prabhu?
Prabhu said, fanatic and fixed is two words. So, we have to fix our mind, fixing on Krishna consciousness, or we can be fanatic.
Very good. Yeah, we can't be fanatic in the sense that it's a show. We have to be, a proven devotee. And intensity and determination is one thing, But a fanatic is like, it's my way or the byway. We can't. Devotee is also compassionate, and he's very compassionate to all the fallen souls. So we have to be very mindful not to be just a fanatic for the sake of being fanatic. A fanatic actually is also someone that is not thinking. So a devotee, if they're thinking, doesn't become fanatical in their attitude towards Krishna consciousness. They can see, oh, I have to preach to this person in this way, I have to talk to this person in that way. So, yeah. Any other comments or questions?
Just a comment on what you're saying about Maharishi and Shirdi, because sometimes the Prabhupada may be distinguishing between Mayavadis and Brahmavadis. So Mayavadis, they think everything's Maya.
Yeah.
And Brahmavadis are actually, they go after Brahman conception, but they're not anything Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
And the examples in the Bhagavad Gita or the Four Kumaras,
that's right,
when Krishna's abode, but they're attracted to personal understanding.
Yeah.
And sometimes people wonder, well, how can that be? That they understand Krishna is the ultimate, but they're somehow attracted to personal conception. The sense that Maharishi is yogi, that he was something of a Brahmavadi.
Yeah.
He understood that Krishna was supreme at one level, but at another level he was attracted to the impersonal conception.
Yeah, somehow.
So there's a distinction there between that and being a Mayavadi, because the Mayavadi defenders.
That's a good point.
The Mayavadis go to hell. Because let's say Krishna's Maya, Krishna's pastimes are Maya, things Maya.
Yeah.
And Maya's a Christ speaks.
So more Brahmavadi.
So more Brahmavadi.
Yeah, the interesting thing, his spiritual master also, I heard just recently, who was Brahmananda Saraswati, who was the Shankaracharya of the north, also was a complete Brahmavadi. He was classified as a Bhakti Yogi. They actually said, you know, you're a Shaivite, but you're a Bhakti Yogi, you know. He was just a complete lover of Krishna. And he had, you know, like he was, like when Shankara passed away, you know. Bhajagovinda, you fools, why aren't you worshipping Govinda? You know? It's really interesting. It's fascinating when you hear about that sort of thing. You know? Any other comments or questions?
One point.
Yes, Prabhu.
That's why this Prabhu said, just now, Srila Prabhupada said, we are sad or happy, we have to chant the holy name. Same as that, Nama only saying that, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Kevalam, Parama, Nasdeva, 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 Nasdeva. There's no other way. We have to chant that.
Yeah. Well, we got the Holy Name Week coming up, and we were discussing recently, Kundalata is not here, but we were discussing with Aniruddha how we're going to do this Harina, this the week of chanting Hare Krishna. And two things: obviously, we're going to do more Harina out there chanting and encouraging people. But also, it's more a time for us to also be reflective within and perfect our own chanting and chant a little bit more, you know. We can always perfect and make it better. And the other point was, like, again, at the interfaith, I mentioned that we're having Holy Name Week. And the other religionists were really interested as to could they also apply it, could we somehow or other apply it to them as well? Which Prabhupada says is no hard and fast rule, you know, what Chaitanya said. Any bona fide name of God, so in the holy name of God. So anyway, yeah. So that's coming up. So there's more opportunity for us to chant Hare Krishna. Yeah. Yes, Guru?
You like to push this idea from mission 4. That the forgetfulness is appreciated. And a sense of duty. Adjus is primary then is forgetfulness of Krishna's transition is caused by his love. So
No, that happens even to devotees now. You know? That when you're a pujari, there's a familiarity that you start to establish with the deity form of the Lord. And we have to, you know, like after we've done our puja, we have to have the prayers of forgiveness. You know, look, I might have been out of line a little bit, you know, may have put the tilak on a little bit too quickly, or there's a familiarity with the divine. You start to fall in love with Krishna, you know. Like even We used to, like when you did, we used to do paraphernalia sankirtan, you know. Sometimes the devotees would say they'd have little mind games with Krishna. Okay, Krishna, the next person is going to buy $100 worth of peanuts or something, you know. And then, like, what happened, Krishna? You know, you didn't buy the $100 worth of peanuts, you know. It's like you have a little relationship going on with Krishna. But that's okay. Krishna says that doesn't matter. That's fine. So, it's not always in awe and reverence. You have a personal relationship with somebody. You can actually have a little bantering. So Krishna pays no mind for that. Krishna accepts their loving service. That's the main thing. So we'll stop here. Thanks very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.